Brad Sesmatt Show, broadcasting live from the Skyview Network Studios.
Hey, a good Friday to you, and we're here on the Brad Sesmatt Show. It's not Brad, it's Jeff Munn from Arizona State Women's Basketball and wherever else they're handing out paychecks, in for Brad. And it is Friday, and it is June the 23rd, and it's supposed to be the slow time of the year. that's not the case here in the Valle del Sol. We got so much stuff going on. Basketball, hockey, a baseball team that just continues to roll but can't seem to make up ground in the West. And a hockey team, as I said, that's seemingly falling apart as right before our eyes. Or maybe they're not. Maybe there's a method to the madness that's going on with the Coyotes. But gosh, there's a ton of stuff to talk about, and we'll do it with a variety of guests. Suns general manager Ryan McDonough will be with us to wrap up the Suns portion of the NBA draft, where I think they did fabulous in getting Josh Jackson, one of their top pick at the number four spot in the first round. We'll also talk about the two players selected in the second round, how the rumors about Eric Bledsoe affected Bledsoe somewhat. A lot of things to talk about with Ryan McDonough. Our friend Craig Morgan, who writes for FanRag Sports, is a Coyotes insider. And because he's an insider, he may be the only one in the room today. After the Coyotes parted ways with Dave Tippett, this head coach, and basically the guy running hockey operations. So today, on the day of the NHL entry draft, it's pretty much John Chyka and nobody else. And we are also hearing word that there might be a trade with the Coyotes coming down. Craig will get us all updated on that coming up later on in the show. And I'll take a few moments later on to share some stories of my own about the late Frank Cush, who, as you no doubt know by now, passed away yesterday at the age of 88. It's one of those little stories. This happens in this market where there are a lot of people who live here who may not know very much about the impact of Frank Cush on this community, on Arizona State as a school. And we'll talk a little bit about that coming up. So lots to get to. And I'm not doing this alone. Unlike the Coyotes, I'm not by myself in this venture. Jared Nielsen is running things in terms of the technology. And guiding me, which is a task all unto itself, is our beloved producer, Eric Sorensen, who now joins us on Ecamm, I hope, now that I've set it up correctly.
Oh, yeah.
Are you on Ecamm?
I am.
There he is on Ecamm.
Hi, me.
There he is, right up there. I'll take Eric Sorensen to block.
It's good to see you, and yes,
it is
late June, and usually if we had one of the four or five different big topics to discuss today, we'd be feeling pretty good, but there's a lot to get to, so let's not dilly-dally.
All right, you're a basketball guy like I am. Josh Jackson, you happy?
I am. It's amazing that we were sitting here a month ago talking about how, woe is the Suns, they didn't get in the top two. Oh my gosh, they're not going to get either of the guards. Josh Jackson's not going to be there. And now they're going to have to figure out which of the other players in a very deep draft, albeit. But it's funny how these things, Munn, sometimes just tend to work themselves out.
Yep.
And I know you're going to have Ryan McDonough coming up in about 10 minutes. And I'll be curious. The one thing I'm most curious to hear from him, if you ask him about his phone and the volume of calls he got either leading up to the draft or right after the Celtics selected Jason Tatum, because there was so much buzz about how all these teams that were, you know, picking in the late teens or down the early 20s. Josh Jackson was sort of that target player that kept coming up in trade talk in terms of, that's the guy we want, and how can we get into the top three or four to get him?
Yeah, and I'm watching the draft yesterday on television, and as soon as the Celtics selected Tatum out of Duke, I immediately thought to myself, okay, they had been kind of saying they wanted Josh Jackson all along, but you're right. I was a little curious to, are we looking at a deal? And you know how this thing works. The deal could have come after the pick of Josh Jackson and could have been announced after they made the selection, but I am thrilled for this reason. Among all the attributes that Josh Jackson brings to the table, he's a great defender. And I remember years and years and years ago, back in the late 80s, I was watching an interview with the play-by-play announcer, Dick Stockton, who at the time was the lead announcer for CBS on the NBA. And he said teams draft players based on how well they defend. I don't know if that's entirely true in every instance, but if you go by that theory, the Suns hit a home run because he is rated as a very good perimeter interior defender. Both he can defend all over the floor. And
I want to give a quick shout-out to our co-worker, Greg Esposito.
Yes.
Josh Jackson has been compared to Sean Marion, just in terms of his build.
It's not a bad comparison.
His game and how he's a defensive stopper. And Espo floated out on Twitter last night that Josh Jackson's new nickname should be The Matrix Reloaded, which I think is just just a great nickname.
I wanted
to make sure some point during today's show that we try to get that thing going in Phoenix once Josh arrives later today for his press conference.
And Espo should get full credit for it. And if there's any royalties
involved, I told him,
hey,
I said, you got to get this thing under copyright as soon as you can before someone steals it.
I agree. On to other matters. The D-backs got another big offensive explosion in winning 2 out of 3 at Colorado yesterday. I'm getting first of all, let's just cut to the chase on this. The D-backs are going to go to the postseason, and I'm saying that there'd have to be two things that would have to happen for them not to at least get a wild card spot. Number one, they'd have to have a massive collapse. Number two, one of the non-division winners in the National League would have to get really hot, really fast. One of them might happen, not both. I mean, you look around at the teams. I think the one team that might be capable of getting on a serious run to make up the ground, there might be two teams. Maybe Milwaukee. I still think the Cubs are going to win the Central. And maybe Pittsburgh. Although their general manager, Neil Huntington, shopping Gerrit Cole around. If he's shopping Gerrit Cole, he doesn't think his team can get on a serious roll. But come on. I mean, the D-backs, they're not going to collapse that badly. I do have concerns from their standpoint as to whether or not they could win a wild card game on the road, because it's either going to be in Los Angeles or Colorado, and a lot of it depends on, you know, who what the pitching matchup is, but that's way down the road. I will say this, and they come home tonight to open a homestand with the opener of a series against the Phillies at Chase Field. There's been a lot of talk, growing talk, about the D-backs making a trade at the deadline. Let me go over this very quickly. Number one, Derek Hall has been quoted as saying, oh, yeah, we'd increase the payroll to make a move. Well, that's not news. They've always been in a proactive position. Ken Kendrick and Derek Hall have always been committed to doing what it takes to win. So that's not news. Him saying that, that's not a five-bill bulletin on AP. The sticking point to me is, what do you have to offer in a trade? And, Eric, if you want to jump in on this, they just don't have a lot of prospects. They've made all these deals the last several years where they've traded away a lot of the strength of their farm system. Their farm system going into the season was ranked in the bottom five of Major League Baseball. And you understood why. I mean, they were going for it. They were trying to win right away. But there's a price to be paid for it. And that price is being paid right now in the sense that if a team called and said, okay, you're looking for a bullpen arm, you're looking for a right-handed bat, we have one. We want Anthony Banda, who's having a fabulous year at Triple A with Reno. You could make that deal, but where does it leave you at the end? And are you going to be able to make a deal that's going to make you so much better that you can guarantee yourself a World Series?
Well, and that's the thing. Right now, it's really not broken. I mean, the Diamondbacks are, what, 20 games over 500? They are positioned quite well, as you said, to make the postseason, whether it's winning the West or taking that wild card spot. So I would just maybe wait and see, because there are still some interesting developments in the NL West.
Yeah.
And I think the Diamondbacks could play really well the rest of the year and still not win the NL West the way the Dodgers and the Rockies have been playing.
It's starting to look that way to me. And the one thing, I think the reasonable goal for them, because I think the Dodgers are going to win that division, they have to get the home field for the wild card game. And I don't think they have to make a move, because, again, I just don't see a team in the National League in the Central or East that can put on a run to catch them.
So the Diamondbacks have 9 home losses.
They
have not hit double-digit losses at Chase Field, and we are almost in July. That's an incredible stat. And they're home for most of next month.
Right. So I don't think they have to make a move, and I think they're in. And I think you can go ahead and plan on at least one postseason game. I really do. I don't see the circumstances where it would go any differently. A quick thought on the Coyotes. And this is going to be an editorial. We can go with the facts that Dave Tippett mutually agreed with the club to part ways last night. We'll have Craig Morgan on to talk about it. But I was thinking about this last night, and I'm just going to say this. Coyote fans have had enough. These poor people, there's nobody in this town that I admire more than Arizona Coyote fans for all they've put up with over the last 20 years. From Richard Burke and Steve Gluckstern coming in, seeing America West Arena, knowing what they were getting, but still complaining about obstructed view seats about 5 minutes after their first season started, to Steve Ellman, who at a press conference said Jerry Colangelo was his role model as an owner, and then placed an arena in a really bad location for the hockey team to succeed, to Wayne Gretzky, who came in with one media person saying, we'll have a Stanley Cup here within 5 years. And then Gretzky, after just one bad decision after the other, being allowed to skulk out the back door when the NHL took over the club without even so much as an apology to the fans of Phoenix, to the NHL owning the team, and really the most stable period in the history of the Coyotes has been when the league owned the franchise, to now, Andrew Barraway buying out his partners, cleaning house, the very abrupt way the Shane Doan situation was handled, and now this. I'm going to say this, and I have a lot of friends that work there, people I care about. My buddy Todd Walsh has been he's a hockey fan. He loves hockey, and he loves that team. And I'm a big fan of Todd Walsh professionally and personally, but I wouldn't mind seeing that team leave. I mean it, because you poor Coyote fans have been beat up enough. You know what? Let's let the Coyotes go to Seattle if this is going to continue, and let's get a minor league team in here where we can go watch hockey and not have to worry about all this garbage. Ryan McDonough's up next on the Brad Sesmatt Show on a Friday. Back on the Brad Sesmatt Show, on the day after the NBA draft, I'm Jeff Munn for Brad. Glad to have you along with us, sports360az.com and azcentralsports.com. And as we said, the day after the NBA draft, what a day it was for a lot of teams, and most notably for our hometown Phoenix Suns, whose general manager, Ryan McDonough, joins us now. And there's a lot of ground to cover, Ryan, and first of all, I appreciate your time because anybody that thinks that it all kind of slows down now for a GM in the NBA is fooling themselves. But let's start with the Josh Jackson pick, which everybody in the NBA is excited about for your club. And the thing I'm excited most of all is how good a defender he is. I don't know how much that came up with the media that attended last night. But I'm a defense guy, and I'm certain that you looked at that's one of the things I know that you're most excited about in regards to Josh Jackson.
Yeah, absolutely. We thought Josh was the best perimeter defender in the draft. And, I made a joke last night that, people say, well, he's the best two-way player in the draft. And I said, okay, I think the game's played two-way, so that really means he's just the best player overall, period. So we're really high on Josh's potential. I think defensively, he's got very quick feet for a 6'8 guy. He's got pretty good length. But I think as importantly, if not more importantly, he's got some aggressiveness and some tenacity about him defensively. He's willing to take on any challenge. And, we think he's a perfect fit for our young core, in terms of some of the team needs where we identified at the end of this past season. We were ranked 28th defensively with our young team, so we need to keep improving on that end, and I think Josh will certainly help that. But we also needed guys who move without the ball and, guys who can make plays. And, I think one of the most underrated aspects of Josh's game offensively is his passing ability. So we're really excited with the entire package, and we think of all the players in the draft. What Josh brings in terms of his skill set and also in terms of his mentality and toughness is exactly what we need, and we think it's the perfect fit for us coming out of the 2017 draft.
I want to get one other thought about Jackson, and then we'll move on to the players you took in the second round. The ESPN commentators in talking about Jackson kind of made that point that he plays with a little bit of a chip on his shoulder. But I was very impressed, Ryan, and it's not fair to judge somebody on like a two-minute interview, but he seems very mature for his age, very composed, has a goal in mind, and if he's playing with a chip on his shoulder, he keeps those emotions very much under control. Is that what you saw of him when you were scouting him?
Absolutely. Yeah, I totally agree with that statement that he does play with a chip on his shoulder. But, you know, I think Devin Booker does too, you know, in a different way. And most of the great players I've been around and most of the great players I've observed do have that chip. You know, Kevin Garnett had it when you know, I was with him with the Boston Celtics. You know, just watching from afar, a guy like Draymond Green certainly has it. So, you know, most of the great players, especially the guys with some grit and some toughness, and that's certainly how I describe Josh, they have it. And they think every time, you know, they step onto the floor that they're able to impose their will on the game and that nobody's going to outwork them and nobody's going to out-tough them. So I think you're absolutely right about it. I think that'll be a good motivating factor for Josh. You know, he was the fourth pick, obviously coming to us here in Phoenix. But, you know, I think if you asked him, he feels like he should have been the number one pick. And, you know, set out to prove that the three teams that passed on him made a mistake. And, you know, if you do look at his history, there were times, especially as recently as last year, where he was widely considered the best player in his class. He was the number one rated consensus player coming out of high school a year ago. So, you know, I think there's a reason for that. But, you know, more importantly, we just think he's a terrific fit for the Suns and brings exactly what we need, you know, both on the floor but also off the court in terms of the locker room and practices. And we think it'll be a great addition to the young team we're trying to build here in Phoenix.
Ryan McDonough, Suns general manager, joins us on the Brad Sesmatch Show. Jeff Munn for Brad. Let's look to the second round. Davon Reed is described as a player who can do a little bit of everything. And you just talked about the fact that Jackson is described by a lot of people as a great two-way player. Well, in reading the assessment on Davon Reed, he kind of sounds the same way, Ryan.
Yeah, Davon's very solid. Davon, he's 6'5", very well put together guy with a 7-foot wingspan. So obviously that's a pretty exceptional length for a shooting guard. He was an all ACC defensive player. And, Jeff, you know how tough that conference is, you know, with some of the elite offensive talent, you know, in the ACC, you're playing a good team. You're guarding, you know, the opponent's best perimeter player, maybe just their best player period, every night, which, you know, in that conference, turns out to be a guy who's almost certainly going to end up in the NBA. So, you know, Davon, you know, the more we studied him, you know, the more he grew on us. He's not a flashy guy. He didn't put up huge scoring numbers, but he is able to defend his position at a high level. He's another guy who brings us toughness and grit. You know, as I mentioned, we identified upgrading our defense and upgrading our toughness as two of our main priorities. But he also shoots the ball at a very high level. He shot 40% from the three-point line. And, you know, we had him in for two separate group workouts here in Phoenix during the pre-draft process, and he really stroked the ball well from the NBA three-point line. So we think his shot will translate very well, and, you know, that's kind of in vogue right now. That's what every team is looking for, is a guy who's able to defend his position at a high level and make open spot-up three-point shots, and we think Davon certainly has the ability to do both of those things and more on the court.
Let me get a quick thought from you too, Ryan, about Alec Peters. And I just I've got some other things I want to get to. The main question I've got on Alec, and I'm sure it came up last night, he had the stress fracture in his right leg in February. Obviously, that's coming along. Otherwise, you wouldn't have invested a draft pick in him. But where is he in relation to when things open up in training camp in October?
Yeah, we got Alec Peters, power forward from Valparaiso, with the 54th pick last night. And, you know, Jeff, I think he would have been drafted a lot higher if he were healthy and if he were able to go through the process, through the pre-draft process. You mentioned the foot injury. You know, we met with him in Chicago, and I think at that time he was at least in a walking boot, maybe even on crutches. That was about a month and a half ago at the pre-draft combine. You know, since then he's gotten out of the boot, he's gotten off the crutches, and is able to, you know, has been able to do some spot shooting. So, you know, all the medical information we have is that the recovery is going very well. I think he's recently been cleared to start doing cardio work and work again on the floor. You know, so I think it's unlikely that he'll play in summer league, even if he's able to. I don't think we'd rush him back. I think that's probably too soon. But we're anticipating him to be completely healthy and make a full recovery sometime, you know, probably in August or September. And we think he'll be a full go for training camp this fall, you know, when we get together again in late September.
Ryan McDonough, Suns general manager, joining us on the Brad Sesmatch Show. Okay, Jason Tatum goes to the Celtics at 3 yesterday. As soon as that pick was announced, how many phone calls? I don't expect you to give away secrets, but how often was your phone ringing in the time in between Boston's selection of Tatum and your selection of Josh Jackson?
So you know, it's funny, Jeff. Actually, it wasn't ringing a lot then. It rang a whole lot before the draft and leading up to the draft. And you know, I think what happens is, you know, teams are trying to gauge who's going to be there. And you know, I think, yeah, we obviously try to keep what we're doing as secret as possible and not give other teams a great feel for it. You know, we don't want to give anybody the ability to potentially trade up ahead of us to get a guy we really like, or take a guy we really like and then try to shake us down for another player pick or something like that. So it rang a lot in advance of the draft. As we got closer and closer to the start of the draft last night, and you know, it seemed more and more like Jason Tatum was going to be Boston's guy at three. I think teams backed off a little bit, realizing that you know, the value of the pick to us. When we, you know, you never know for sure, but when we thought Josh Jackson was going to be there at four, you know, the value to us got even higher at that point. So there were a lot of calls and activities trying to get to the pick, you know, probably Monday through Wednesday, even into the morning yesterday on Thursday. And then as we got closer to the draft, maybe it was my tone, maybe it was just, you know, how comfortable we were with Josh, but you know, there weren't actually a ton of calls on the draft because at that point we were very comfortable keeping the pick at four, and we were excited because we thought we got the player that, you know, of everyone in the whole draft fit our team and our roster the best.
One thing that you cannot control, and I know you'd love to be able to, is all the speculation. And prior to the draft, a rumor got out that you had a deal in place involving Eric Bledsoe going to Denver. It was out there on Twitter. About 5 minutes later, it got pulled back. And as I said, there's nothing a general manager can do about the media running with something. But you're left with something in your lap in terms of dealing with Eric Bledsoe and how he feels after these stories kind of come out. Have you had a chance to talk to him since last night?
No, I haven't. You know, and Eric's name's been in a bunch of trade rumors, and you know, Eric has been with us 4 years now. I think he was the first player I acquired, you know, and after my group was hired in Phoenix 4 years ago, and he's been here the whole time. And you know, we've done a contract extension with him. He's obviously done extremely well on the floor. So, you know, that's part of the deal. Eric's been through this enough now where he just, I think, ignores it and moves on. I'll just say this, there was nothing to that rumor at all. I'm not sure where it came from or why it got out there. But you know, I got a funny story for you, Jeff. So yesterday, Robert Sarver and I went downstairs and we were going to meet with Coach Watson, before the draft, you know, just kind of go over everything one more time and who we liked and go over our final draft board. And, we have a lot of our guys in Phoenix working out this time of year, which is, I think, pretty unique and unusual, you know, for an NBA team to have, you know, 5 to 10 roster players in late June working out. So, you know, a couple of the guys in our locker room were Dragan Bender and Eric Bledsoe, and those guys were on their phones. So, you know, I went over to them and said, hey, you know, I heard rumors you guys are getting traded. You know, where are you going? You know, can you tell me anything? And, you know, so they laughed about it. So anyways, we keep it light. You know, obviously there was a lot out there, a lot of speculation, a lot of rumors, and you know, like I told those guys and their agents, you know, if you ever were to get traded, you hear it from me, you hear it from us first. Don't pay any attention to all the speculation, all the noise. You know, because if you did, I think every player in the league would have been traded two or three times over the past year, if not even over the past week.
It probably doesn't hurt, too, to have all those players working out that you've got a practice court where the AC's running this time of year. That's probably a good reason for them to get inside.
Well, yeah, you're absolutely right, and it's a credit to our core, especially our young core, that the guys are here. Like you said, I don't think it's because they enjoy the climate this time of year. It's because, you know, they're committed to getting better, they're committed to improving, and because, you know, Coach Watson and his staff have done a great job creating a culture and an environment that's conducive to work and, you know, where the guys want to be around. And, you know, as I mentioned, it's pretty rare. I mean, we've had up to 10 roster players in at different times throughout the summer. And honestly, Jeff, I think if you talk to some of the other 29 teams, they might have, you know, two or three guys. They might not have any guys in this time of year. So, you know, we're excited about our group. We're excited about our young core. But, yeah, as you mentioned, I don't think the reason they're in Phoenix is so they can, you know, go for long walks outside in late June.
No, I agree with you. It's very impressive that they're all working out at this time of year. Last question. I got about 30 seconds. We can anticipate seeing Josh Jackson in the summer league?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, you'll see Josh Jackson this afternoon in Phoenix. But yeah, he's fully healthy. We worked him out in the pre-draft process. So he's as we speak, he's probably en route to Phoenix. He'll do a press conference kind of the middle of this afternoon. And then, have some events here around the city, tonight and tomorrow morning. But, Josh is, be on board for Summer League, as will Davon Reed. And, I think Alec Peters will be there. But as I mentioned, due to the rehab coming off the injury, he will not be able to play.
And fans will get to see the Summer League on a variety of networks, ESPN, NBA TV, and so on. Ryan, congratulations. There's a lot of hard work that's put in by a lot of people who never get the credit, and I know you're very proud of your staff. So congratulations to all of you on a terrific draft, and we'll look forward to talking to you down the road, and especially at the press conference this afternoon. Thanks for being with us.
No, we certainly appreciate that. And you mentioned the scouting staff. Those guys, some of them had early flights this morning to start going for next year. So already on to the 2018 draft. And, it's a group effort, but we're really excited about the way it turned out. And we certainly appreciate you having me on today.
No problem. Thank you, Ryan. Ryan McDonough, Suns general manager, joining us. And, I think a lot of us are very excited to see Josh Jackson play in the Summer League, and it'll start up in a couple of weeks in Las Vegas on a variety of networks. I think ESPN's going to pick up some Summer League games this year as well. So, big-time stuff with the NBA. We got all kinds of things covered on this show, and we'll keep looking at all the other things that are going on in sports coming up on the Brad Sesmatch Show on a Friday, sports360az.com and azcentralsports.com. Back on a Friday on the Brad Sesmatch Show, which you can get through sports360az.com or azcentralsports.com. I'm Jeff Munn for Brad. We're glad to have you along on a Friday. The Coyotes continue to make news. And finally this morning, they made some news that didn't leave you necessarily scratching your head. Prior to that this week, everything has made you scratch your head. And so to kind of relieve the itch, we've brought on FanRag Sports NHL Coyotes insider Craig Morgan to help us try, as best he can in a brief period of time, sort out the mess that's going on at the Coyote offices. Now, Craig, first of all, thanks for joining us. But I get before we get into what took place last night and earlier this week, the club did make a trade today, and you can better speak to all the particulars than I can, so I'm just going to let you roll out the details on this.
Well, they have made a couple of trades now. They have acquired defenseman Nicholas Chalmerson from the Chicago Blackhawks, an immensely underrated player, in my opinion, who will play the right side on their top pairing with Oliver Ekman-Larsson. They have been looking for this piece for so long, and this is a really solid trade by general manager John Chyka, sending Connor Murphy, a defenseman, and a center prospect, Laurent Dauphin, to the Blackhawks in return. The Blackhawks, of course, were in a very cap-strapped situation. So, in a way, the Coyotes took advantage of it. Chalmerson is a terrific two-way player. He's 30 years old. He has 2 years left on a reasonable deal for $4.1 million per year. He's really going to improve their defensive play and finally solidify that top pairing. The other move they made was for another piece that they've been lacking for a very long time. They got center Derek Stepan from the New York Rangers, and they also got Antti Raanta, the backup goaltender, who many people believe is ready to step into a number one role. So in these fell swoops, John Chyka has filled two longtime positions of need, and he's found the number one goaltender to replace Mike Smith, whom the Coyotes traded last week.
Among other things, obviously, it relieves whatever concerns there were about the Coyotes having just one person, hockey operations-wise, going into tonight's entry draft, because obviously they have traded away their pick. But going back to last night, if there's a capsule way to describe what happened between Dave Tippett and Andrew Barraway, what would that description be?
Well, I know you hear about mutual partings a lot with sports teams, and often it's just glossing over the realities underneath. But in this case, this truly was a mutual parting. I think Andy Barraway, the owner of the Coyotes, wanted to go in a different direction, probably didn't want to spend so much on a coach as he was on Dave Tippett. And Dave Tippett was ready for a change, wasn't really ready, I think, to work with Andy Barraway, wasn't convinced about the direction of this team. So they just had a lot of differences of opinion, and Dave chose to step away, take a breath. He told me, I talked to him earlier today, he's going to take a couple weeks, go back to his home in Minnesota, which was unfortunately struck by a tornado and had some damage. going to think about the future, but he still wants to work. He still plans to work. And in my mind, when Dave Tippett decides he wants to come back into the game, he's going to have a bunch of teams lining up for his services.
There will be, and we're talking with Craig Morgan, Coyotes insider with FanRag Sports on the Brad Sesmatt Show. When we look back in a few years, or we can make this assessment now, there have been some good coaches with this franchise since it's moved here, from Don Hay to Bobby Francis and so on. Dave Tippett, I think, probably means as much to this franchise for what he was able to accomplish during a really difficult time as maybe anybody who stood back at the bench with that franchise.
Without question, when he came on board, the threat of relocation for this franchise was real. They were a heartbeat away from going to Portland. Dave Tippett was charged with making this team competitive immediately. They didn't necessarily have the pieces on the roster to do so, but he got them to three straight playoff berths, which, you know, if you know Coyotes history, is a rarity. And in 2012, they went all the way to the Western Conference Final, where they lost to Los Angeles. No question, he helped keep this team here. He gave Coyotes fan base something to feel good about, and I think he handled himself really with grace, with class the entire time here. If you talk to his former players, Shane Doan among them, they will say nothing but good things about Dave Tippett.
I want to get to Shane Doan if we have time, but you mentioned relocation. A lot of the moves that have taken place this week, and we understand that Andrew Barraway is prohibited right at the moment from speaking to the media because from the NHL point of view, the transactions regarding ownership haven't been completed. But there has been a lot of speculation in social media that all the moves that have gone on prior to this morning were, in a sense, getting the Coyotes put in a position where they were about to relocate. Let's clear that up for the time being, for the short term. This trade to me says there is a plan, there is a direction, and people don't need to worry about Andrew Barraway's going to wake up in about a month and say, we're heading to Seattle.
Well, I don't know Andrew Barraway's intentions, so I can't speak to those because, as you mentioned, he has not spoken publicly other than through press release quotes filtered by the team. But, yes, these moves suggest that they are trying to build a very good team. I don't know what Andrew Barraway's intentions are. Maybe he wants to sell this team for a profit. He is a businessman as well. But, again, when you're talking about relocation, that decision is not up to Andrew Barraway if, in fact, he did want to move the team. That's up to the league and the Board of Governors. And Gary Bettman and Bill Daly, the commissioner and deputy commissioner of the NHL, have both been pretty steadfast in their desire to keep the team here. Now, of course, they need an arena. They need a long-term option there to make that happen. So that's one of the things to watch down the road here.
Now, let me, and again, we're talking with Craig Morgan, FanRag Sports, Coyotes insider. Let's turn to Shane Doan for a moment. I know it was something earlier this week. As soon as the news came out on Doan, I thought if I was running the Vegas Golden Knights, I would call him because they need to get a foothold in Las Vegas right away. And not just in terms of what they do on the ice, but what they do in the community. And I don't know of anybody who would better fit that role than Shane Doan. I'm not saying Doan would want to do it, but if you're George McPhee, the GM, or Bill Foley, the owner, aren't you placing a call to Shane Doan as soon as he becomes a free agent?
I just don't think that's a situation Shane Doan would want to pursue if he is to play another year. I think if Shane's going to go somewhere, it would be with a team that he'd hope to at least be a playoff team, maybe a team that can win a couple rounds, even be a cup contender. So I don't think Vegas would factor into that mix. Shane Doan hasn't even decided if he's going to play. I know his agent has said he wants to, but I talked to Shane yesterday again, and he is not certain. He's actually up in Canada. He just headed up there with his family yesterday. He's going to think about it for a while and decide whether he wants to come back. He's going to look at the offers, of course, too, to see if it's a role that he's interested in, and then he'll make his decision.
I made this point, and I think this is worthy of note, and I tweeted it out Monday when the Doan news broke. Anybody that thinks that this town doesn't care about the Coyotes should look at the way the town reacted when the Doan news broke. I mean, if I was a Coyote fan and I thought, boy, I'm rooting for a team that nobody cares about, that's got to be blown away because everybody, media, the public, they probably could have gotten politicians to talk about Shane Doan being let go by the Coyotes. It does make quite a statement about how the community felt about Doan as a player and how much they do pay attention to the Coyotes as a franchise.
No question. Look, I've become acquainted with many of the members of the Coyotes Nation, the fan base. They may not be as large as some other cities, but they are very avid fans. They're loyal fans. and they're vocal fans. You obviously know this, Jeff. You know, when you win, you can build a fan base even more, and they've desperately needed to do that for a while. But yeah, when you saw Shane Doan treated the way, in my opinion, he was treated poorly, you saw the reaction from the fan base, and you understood that there is quite a bit of passion for this team. And if they can make the kind of moves that they're making this morning at the draft, if they can keep building this, maybe that fan base grows even more.
You know, and let me go back to the subject of the Vegas Golden Knights for a minute. The announcement also came out this week that they will play their home opener regular season against the Coyotes. They will open the Coyotes' home schedule. The NHL, I think, you can pretty much read easily into this. They're trying to build a rivalry between these two franchises for obvious reasons, aren't they?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, there are only two teams in the desert, so, and they're in close proximity. You've probably done that drive 100 times. I know I have.
Oh, yeah.
I think a lot of fans will be going back and forth, so maybe they can spark a rivalry here. Of course, you know, that I think rivalries are best built in the playoffs, so it may take a little while, but why not get it started with this?
In the grand scheme of things, Craig, is this a desirable spot for a coach? John Chyka will get interest because, as they say, there's one of 32 openings in the NHL to be a head coach. But how desirable is this among the coaching community, do you think?
Well, I asked me that last night, and I'm not sure what I would have said. Asked me it this morning after the trade that they've made today, and I think it just got a whole lot more desirable. With these moves, and I don't think John Chyka's done yet today, the Coyotes just got very competitive. I don't think it's a stretch at all to talk about this being a playoff team next year in the Western Conference. And look, even if they don't want to hire an established older coach, maybe they want a younger guy who could come a little cheaper. There are plenty of people looking for opportunity in this business, so I don't think that they will have a problem finding a coach.
Do they have to get a name coach? And I realize name being a relative term, and I think, and because I don't follow it closely, isn't Lindy Ruff looking for work?
Yeah, he is. I don't know if that's the route they're taking. They may be looking for a younger guy, you know, that relates better to the players, takes maybe a little bit more of a wide-open style, lets the players freelance, the offensive players create a little bit more. We'll see where they're going in that direction. Really haven't had a chance to explore that much yet since the news is so fresh.
Craig Morgan joins us. I know you also do, and I've got about 30 seconds. I'm going to change gears on you. Your thoughts about Frank Kush?
That was a tough one. And, you know, I my last conversation with Frank, I know things weren't going well for him, but I have had such great interactions with him in the past, and everybody knows what he meant to the ASU community. He's truly a legend over there. He's going to be missed. And I'm most of all, Jeff, I'm just going to miss my conversations with my casual conversations, not for print, not for anything I was doing for work, just sitting down and chatting with Frank.
Yeah, I think we all are. Craig, I know you got a busy day ahead, even though the seventh pick in the first round's been traded away. That doesn't mean that things, you sit back and relax. So have a good day. And
Bought me some time.
take a deep breath and dive in, pal. I appreciate you being with us.
Thanks for having me, Jeff.
You bet. Craig Morgan, FanRag Sports, Coyotes insider. He also writes for thesundevils.com. Really a guy who's dialed in very well with a lot of entities here in the Valley. We mentioned Frank Kush. When I come back, I want to do two things. I want to clarify something I said about the Coyotes in the opening segment, but I want to share some thoughts with you. If you're still kind of saying, what's the deal with Frank Kush? Give me a little minute or two, and I'll tell you a little story about what he meant to this community at the height of his coaching tenure. We'll do that next on the Brad Sesmatch Show, sports360az.com, azcentral.com. I want to clarify a few things, and we're back on the Brad Sesmatch Show, by the way, on a Friday. Jeff Munn for Brad. Appreciate you being with us on sports360az.com and azcentralsports.com. By the way, sports360az.com has all the updated information on the Dave Tippett story. They'll update the Coyotes in relation to trades through the day. Obviously, they'll have the latest from John Jackson's press conference. Josh Jackson's press. Why did I go blank on that for a minute? Help me out here, Eric. Josh Jackson.
Yes.
Why did
Josh
I say
Jackson.
John Jackson? There was a wide receiver
at USC
with the
many
Cardinals
years ago. Yeah,
and he was also involved in one of the greatest baseball fights between ASU and USC ever.
Yes, he was.
Josh Jackson will have a press conference later today. Let me clarify something I said earlier in the show. I was a little heavy-handed when I said maybe the Coyotes ought to leave. Listen, let me be clear about this. I have a great many friends that work at the Coyotes. One of my dearest friends in the broadcast business is Todd Walsh, and he cares very much about the NHL in Phoenix, as do I. I don't want them to leave. All I was trying to say was I feel so bad. If you're a Coyote fan, I feel bad for you. You have put up with so much garbage over the last 20 years. You've had very little time to just concentrate on hockey. There's been worries about, are they leaving? Obstructed view seats. We got to get a new building. Wayne Gretzky didn't follow through on what he said he would do. Steve Ellman was more interested in developing Westgate than developing a hockey team. And on and on and on and on. And maybe these trades today give you a little bit of comfort in the idea that maybe Andrew Barraway and John Chyka do have a plan, and they're not just paring down payroll to get out of town and go to Seattle. All I'm saying is this. If you're a hockey fan, you've put up with enough, and you deserve some time to just concentrate on things like good goaltending and can we kill penalties and how do we do on the power play. No more of this stuff about where are they going to play and how much money are they losing and why did they have to cut payroll or why did they do this to Shane Doan or are they going to move to Seattle. You deserve an opportunity to just concentrate on hockey. And if he can't do that, if the Coyotes are going to continue to struggle with arena issues and payroll issues and what is the owner doing, then I would just, yeah, there's a part of me that's like, I don't want to do it anymore. And I would rather just see a minor league team here like we had with the Roadrunners in the International League, where all we worried about was hockey. That's all I'm saying. Naturally, I do want the Coyotes to stay. But I want all this stuff to come to an end. Let's just concentrate on hockey. And if we can't do that, comma, dot, dot, dot. All right, Frank Cush. I get it. Many of you who live here probably got here after Frank Cush left Arizona State University in 1979. Let me tell you a little bit about what it was like to grow up here. And I'm a native. I was born in 1958. So in my childhood was the height of Frank Cush's success and run at Arizona State as the football coach. In the late 60s and early 70s, Frank Cush endorsed every product you can think of, from bowling balls to auto supplies to mattresses. Because if you could get Frank Cush's name on your advertisement, it was gold. That's the impact he had from a business standpoint. There was a famous PSA that he recorded for Arizona Blood Services where he looked right in the camera and told people to donate blood. And he finished at the end. I'm looking right at the camera and he said, "Do it now!" In that gruff voice of his. And it had an impact. He was the guy. I wrote about this on Facebook yesterday. J. Russell Nelson, who was the president at ASU, said, "Athletics is the window upon which the university is viewed." Well, nobody did more to open that window to the rest of the world than Frank Cush did. He made Arizona State University relevant not only as an athletic program, but as a school. You can't begin to quantify how many businesses may have decided to relocate here because they saw an ASU football game on television in the mid-70s and thought, gee, that weather in November, that looks really nice. ASU and their pro-style offense so enamored TV executives that when they played Nebraska in the Fiesta Bowl, CBS sent their number one NFL announced team, Pat Summerall and Tom Brookshire, to do the game because they couldn't wait to see Arizona State's pro-style offense. Frank Cush had an impact on a lot of things on that campus. Every one of ASU's athletic facilities, Wells Fargo Arena, Whiteman Tennis Center, Sun Angel Stadium, the expanded Sun Devil Stadium, all relatable very, very easily to the success of Frank Cush's football program. ASU's in the Pac-10 / Pac-12 because of Frank Cush's football success. It was Arizona that wanted to join the Pac-10, and the Pac-8 said, "No, we don't really want you, but if you can get that school in Tempe with its 70,000-seat football stadium, we'll take you too." And they did. Frank wasn't crazy about it, was worried about getting his program to a point where they could compete in a smash-mouth conference after years in a conference, the WAC, that depended on speed. But clearly, nobody meant more to the success of Arizona State athletics than Frank Cush. And I agree with Greg Hansen, and I don't always agree with Greg. If there's a Mount Rushmore of Arizona sports, it's Frank Cush, Jerry Colangelo, Lute Olson, and somewhere down the line, there's somebody in fourth place. Rest in peace, Coach. You did your job well. Thanks for joining us on a Friday. stay with Sports360AZ.com because there's sports breaking all the time, and they'll keep you right on top of it. And we appreciate you joining us here for the Brad Sesmatch Show, which you can see on Sports360. It's easy for me to say, isn't it? Sports360AZ.com and AZCentralSports.com. It must be Friday.